Welcome to another episode of The Catholic Couple, having fun with faith, family, and friends. I'm your co-host, Bobby Fredrickson. With me, as always, my beautiful wife,
Katie Fredrickson.
I'm the convert Catholic, and she's
the cradle Catholic.
And here we are on a brand new episode on parenting. Mm-hmm. We're going to go through some quotes and some live clips of Dr. Becky Kennedy, who was recently on the Lewis Howes show, but she's known for...
She's known as the parent whisperer.
Yeah, the millennial parent
whisperer. The millennial parent whisperer.
From Time Magazine.
She's very young.
Yeah, she's a clinical psychologist from New York.
She gives some really good advice, really good practical advice. And we were honestly watching these episodes and watching these different talks because we wanted to have advice ourselves. And we thought, well, this would be a good topic for a podcast. But just full disclaimer, this is all secular. We are going to find ways to tie faith into what we're going to be talking about. But we are going to just unpack three different themes to what she talks about within the context of a TED Talk she gives. And then what is this guy's name?
His name is Lewis Howes, H-O-W-E-S.
And what
his podcast is The School of Greatness.
Oh.
He's a lifelong learner. He used to be a professional athlete.
Oh, okay.
And he's interviewed everybody from Kobe Bryant to Dr. Peterson to tons and tons of people. And he's just interested in the school of greatness, how to be better at all aspects of life.
So from anything.
Doctors,
and he speaks about how he's not particular. He's not a parent.
He doesn't have any children.
But he's just because of her advice is so practical and that she's labeled this whisperer of parent, you know, millennial parents. It's a very good conversation.
Well, it's also...
And he's saying, like, she speaks relationally.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying. It could be for all relationships. Yeah, that's right. What I was going to say.
So we're going to just play different clips from talks under three themes. One is restore. One is resilience. And the other is relationship. This is in no order whatsoever, except for the order of kind of how the conversation will go. You know, in this episode. So we're going to focus first on that restore. We're going to have just an open conversation of like kind of our reaction and how we've just sat on the couch and had the same conversation about the things that she says. So yeah, do you want to dive into that or do you want to say any background things on her before we get started?
Yeah, just one more thing about Dr. Becky. Her website is Good Inside. So that's where the tie-in to Christianity can really start from is that
there's no such thing as a bad kid.
Yeah, that everybody is just we've talked about this many times in the podcast of trying to separate, especially in discipline when we're trying to differentiate the behavior of the kid, which is unacceptable, and them, that they're still lovable. And especially in this day and age, it's like everybody's so tied to our behaviors as their identity.
Well, right.
So trying to separate those, especially when it's going against Christian faith or it's in the worst time, you know, your mistakes don't define you. How you rebound, how you restore,
and
how you
resilience. And she ties that into not just with how we should as parents treat our children, but how we also should treat ourselves in mistakes that we may or will make as parents and how to, like basically stating, and I'll let her explain all this way better than I can and we'll unpack these things, but just this whole idea of that inherent dignity, worth, and value that all of us human beings have from God, right? That we are made in His image and likeness and that our what we do does not define who we are and that we are always able to repent, to change, to make a bad choice, you know, make up for a bad choice that you make, turn around and
to learn from it.
And to learn from it. So
yeah, created us, after He created everything, He said it was good. Mm-hmm. So we are all good inside, but we do make mistakes and we have shortcomings.
Right.
You know, as parents, what really caught my attention with Dr. Becky was I just somehow was scrolling and found her. Is that, you know, there's a part where it's like all parents yell. You know?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about first. Let's just unpack what she says, and then we'll get into this.
Let's go for it.
Yeah. But that's what attracted
you. Hopefully the technology works. We're going to be playing live in clips as we're doing this.
But I think what you're trying to say is what attracted you to her in the first place.
The thing that I need to work on the most.
What you need to work on. Because I'm yelly too. My mom was yelly. My grandma was yelly.
Let's just get it out there. We're not perfect parents.
No.
But I think
that's why we're seeking practical
different advice, especially our daughter is very strong-willed and she goes into those things like that. But I think that being humble is the key. It's like admitting like when you're wrong, and we're going
to
get into that,
what
you need to work on. And as you know, when your kids are born, no one hands you a guide like this is how to do it.
And that's what she says in here too.
And that's mostly what we do is what we've learned growing up. And unfortunately, some people have come from broken homes. Some people never had a dad. Some people had a bad relationship. Some people had great, you know, parents, but that doesn't mean necessarily
parents,
that
but those parents
gonna...
still made mistakes.
Yes.
You know, so, okay. I'm going to, play the first clip. It's from a TED talk that she gave. Basically, it's about a 12-minute TED talk where she talks about this theme of restore, right? It's restore. Okay. That she says restore. And she just defines it a little bit, and it's like a minute long clip.
And
we'll unpack it.
We'll link these videos for the whole videos. We'll link it in the podcast description below.
And there's a lot more out there that she's had. These are just three things that resonated with us recently, and they're all R's that resonated with us recently. So many R's.
Restore, resilience. That was what we said. I'm just keeping track of the R's. That was earlier.
There's a lot of R's. Okay. This one is on restore. Okay.
Millions of parents around the globe struggle with this issue. All parents yell. No one knows what to do next. Well, I'm determined to fill this gap. After all, there's almost nothing within our interpersonal relationships that can have as much impact as repair. Whenever a parent asks me, what one parenting strategy should I focus on? I always say the same thing. Get good at repair. So what is repair? Repair is the act of going back to a moment of disconnection, taking responsibility for your behavior, and acknowledging the impact it had on another. And I want to differentiate a repair from an apology, because when an apology often looks to shut a conversation down, hey, I'm sorry I yelled. Can we move on now?
Mm-hmm.
A good repair opens one up.
So it wasn't restore, it's repair. I wasn't very good at remembering what the things are, but I remember the other two.
Restore, repair.
Yeah, it's the same meaning, right? So repair, and I think that, and again, if you watch this video, she goes on to talk about how you're not going to be perfect. All parents yell, including myself, who is a, you know, parenting whisperer, clinical psychologist, right? That it's going to happen, but what you do after the event when you lose it, it is what matters more than the event itself. So in that moment, you're not just repairing the relationship with your child. You're also showing them what it looks like. You're modeling what it looks like that when you lose it in a relationship with someone, when you lose your temper or you say things you don't mean, that there's a formula to making it right. And I like that the most out of this is that so much of, you know, we want to show we're the parent, that we are right. That if we say that an action that we did is wrong, it's going to somehow make them lose respect for us, or that they won't have to listen to us, or that empowers them in some way. I think it's the opposite. When you really understand it and unpack it, it really is you're modeling effective relational skills of that they're going to be able to carry with them into adulthood with other people they'll have relationships with.
Yeah, that's part of it too, is that repairing and restoring the relationship with your child, because your child doesn't have the same brain power or the tools that you have, and they don't quite even understand most of the time why they do the things that they do. They just understand that you're mad now, I did something, and then they really internalize it and make it like it's them. They don't know how to separate the behavior from us saying things to them. They literally feel and take it very personal. So then, you know, then what's usually the next thing we do? If we yell, it's like, all right, go to your room.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when they're in their room? It's like the worst thing for them is when they're isolated by themselves. And then they're thinking, I'm so bad. Mm-hmm. I'm a bad person.
And our daughter,
not so much that what they did was bad, but they internalize that they are bad.
Right. And our daughter needs that instant, like, are you still mad at me? Like, how can I make it right? And it's just,
because she wants the repair.
She wants that repair. She seeks it pretty quick when we're still upset. And that makes it sometimes way worse. My thing is, this is all about self-control. And you'd be a liar if you said that even as an adult, that every adult has self-control and control over their emotions. And that's a big thing that she talks about throughout all of the talks that I've watched of her. It's all about your own emotional regulations and having a control on your own emotions. And so when you lose that control of an emotion, it takes a maturity and it takes a bit of self-reflection to restore or repair the relationship that got hurt when you didn't regulate your emotions. And so we try to help toddlers understand how to regulate their emotions. We teach kids how to regulate their emotions. Preteens, my goodness. With all the prayers and help in the world, we try to help them regulate their emotions because that's when they go kind of wild. But as adults, we have to model that. But when you're stressed out with all the things that you have going on in your life, right? When it's like she gave a really good opening with this, you know, about all the stress that she has. She ran home. I mean, I can only imagine how busy she is in her own practice, right? She still runs home, starts dinner. You know, stressed out from work, stressed out from dinner, gets dinner on the table and her kid complains that it's chicken or something and she just loses it. You know, everybody has a trigger. And I think that healthy ways of talking those things out helps kids feel safe. Even if you become a little screamy every once in a while. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Yeah. That they know that they're safe and they're loved.
Well, that's one of her other lines that she said, and she said she didn't take credit for it. She couldn't remember who said it, but connect before you correct. Mm-hmm. Is that sometimes, like after we yell, okay, I get it, but like a lot of times we don't yell and they're doing the behavior. So there's these other times when, like I said, it depends on the age, but most of the kids don't know why they do what they do. Mm-hmm. It's just they don't think before they say something or how they act.
Some adults do that too. When I say a lot of adults do
but
that.
But if we try to just, you know, correct the behavior and we don't look to them, that's why we also have done one on the 1 minute father. And
I was going to say the 1 minute reprimand helps to disconnect the person from the behavior.
And it also connects.
It also connects, but at the same time, it also can't be done yelling.
No.
So, you know, you can't give a 1 minute reprimand yelling. You can't. Yeah.
And that's why we had Dr. Ray on, and he also, and Dr. Becky, she doesn't like to work with the kids. They want to work with the adults because mm-hmm. the adults are the ones who are...
They're going to model the behavior that the desired behavior.
Yeah. And if you know, Jocko, he always says, he's a Navy SEAL. He always says that, if you lose your emotions, it's a sign of a weak person. Mm-hmm. It's like the people who have their emotions under control, those are the people I look up to the most, who are calm and cool and collected when the times are stressful or when things mm-hmm. going on, when everyone else is losing their heads and that person is steady and they're not losing it. Mm-hmm. And those are the people that I've always looked up to. Like, how do you do that? Like, how do you not let your emotions go up and down? And it's our job as parents, when those emotions get really high in our children, is not to match what they're...
To match them,
to
yes.
To not match them.
They need us
to make
to
it...
To level them
To out. Bring it right. down, bring to, it to down. Bring the level down. And yeah. usually, one trick that usually works is immediately lowering your voice, like almost to a whisper. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, then it's like, okay, why is Dad talking like that? Mm-hmm. It's like you're getting serious. You know, and that's public speaking too. All of a sudden someone gets real quiet and they talk like this. It's like everyone kind of leans in a little bit. But if the kids are yelling and they're emotional and then you fight fire with fire, just everybody's going to get burned.
You're going to try to one-up each other. So yeah. what does it look like? I'm really stressed out from work. I came home and no one's listening. And things are everywhere. No one's following my directions. And and sometimes the only time they'll listen to me is if I yell. That has happened. And you come back and you have that conversation. Why do you only listen? listen to me. I ask you to do the same thing four times. It isn't until I get what I call demon mom voice. You know, I'm like, get in the car. You know, like, it's like, why do I have to get there for me to be listened to? So, but
well,
later
a lot of
in the repair, you know, I don't need to speak to you that way. But what are some, what is it going to take for you to,
A lot of it has to do with boundaries, but it's not necessarily just boundaries, but it's also given them the tools and the skills on how to regulate their emotions.
But so, how do they do that if we're not modeling that for them?
So we have to model it, but obviously breathing is a big thing. We always, you know, breathe.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about me. I just lost it.
We have to control our breathing.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is when I do that,
What does the repair look like?
You're going into how the kids monitor their emotions. I'm talking about me as the parent. I've said the same thing four times. I have to get to that level of rah, 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 to get an actual response.
Well, then the expectations has to work on, we have to work on our expectations. So she gave an example of like a kid jumping on a couch over and over again. And then she said, I'm going to go over there. You know, giving a warning first, she said, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to remove you off that couch. Now, but I think it's also given them options. You can get off the couch and you can jump on the floor, but I've already told you to stop jumping on the couch. If you don't stop jumping on the couch, then I'm going to come over there and then I'm going to remove you myself. Mm-hmm. And kind of just letting them know, like, this is what you're doing. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. This is the thing that
tolerated.
I'm going, it's not going to be tolerated. And a lot of it, what it is, she made another good analogy, which was, it's like if you're on a plane and you're the pilot, and as parents, we are the pilots, mm-hmm. and a passenger jumps up and starts screaming and starts going nuts on the plane and says, I want to go here. I want to go here. I don't want to go to Chicago. I want to go to LA, and starts screaming and yelling. Mm-hmm. And we just get up and listen and turn the plane around. Like that doesn't do any help. But if we stay calm as the pilot and the leader and just be forthright, and be steady. You know, what the kids are really looking for is sturdiness.
But we
have to regulate that within ourselves.
Yeah, but sometimes we aren't. That's the point of what she's saying.
So what are you asking exactly?
The topic here is repair.
So how do you repair yourself?
How do you repair after you just lost it?
With the kid.
With the kids.
We already said that. We go to them and you have to apologize to them and say, I'm sorry that I handled it.
Well, she said it's not an apology. It's a repair. And so you have to also have a
solution.
But
not just an apology to move on. She used an example of, I apologize. Can we move on?
Like, okay, I just yelled at you. I'm sorry. But I think that
then continue
going to the root, which is the next part. Transition of what I'm going to go into next, of the whole idea of understanding the root cause of the behavior in the first place and addressing that as well.
So if we can get to that, sometimes it's hard to understand, like, where is this coming from? What's the root cause? It's not just the chicken. It's these other things. It's every time we come to dinner, the kids, I don't want this. I don't want to eat that. But we can't make special meals for each individual kid every single time. It's like, but at the same time, it's like in the 50s and 60s, the parents are like, whatever we put on the table, you ate it. And that was it. And there was no conversation. It's like, okay, well.
No, so what I'm saying is in a repair,
yeah.
When you have the conversation, I lost my, I've had repair conversations. I would say, you know what? I'm sorry that it got to the point where I had to get that angry. And I should have, you know, handled it this way, right? Typically what happens next is the child says back to me, yeah, and I'm sorry that I did blah, blah, blah. And then what we do is we have a conversation that is, what do you think going forward?
How we could address that,
what do you think going forward are ways that we can make sure we're getting into the car at the right? What's it going to take for all of us to get into the car by 6:45? Because that's the goal, right? And, you know, it's brainstorming. Listen, this is why I got mad. I got mad because you were making me late for work. And when I get like, I'm going to be late. I have things I have to do and I'm stressed out. And so I just lost it. But if we all could get in the car by 6:45, we could have a good, you know, I don't want to lose my temper and I'm sorry that I did. And these are the reasons why. And then brainstorming with them on how how to make the desired behavior happen, I'm going to work on things that I could do to calm myself down and not lose it. Well, but I also need a solution to
I think first, then you have to go back to the beginning. We have to establish the expectation, the boundaries. Yeah. If this doesn't happen, then these are the consequences. And you have to be sturdy on that. Yeah. And if they're not sturdy, then never lose or yelling never makes it better. Mm-hmm. So anytime we yell, it's just trying to overcompensate.
What she said in the video about the losing it over the chicken, right, is that she could have the conversation with him about how she actually understands where he's coming from, of maybe he doesn't like it, but there's better ways to talk, like that was still, you know, could there be a better way that you could communicate that that's not your favorite meal, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's things like that. So when you do a repair, it's not just we both apologize to each other. It's finding a solution to the desired behavior that you do want as a parent. Of why are shoes always in the hallway? I yell because I tripped over it. You know, think about like just the little things that are your parent triggers, right? I'm sure every parent has a trigger that they've asked, and it's typically, I mean, for me anyway, I have no idea if it's like this for other parents, but I'm sure it is. It's the same thing I keep saying over and over, right? It's the same thing that I get upset about, or I've said, or I've established the expectation, but the expectation isn't being met and I feel unheard. And what do people, and I say this, and that's what I say too in a repair conversation. I'll say, I'm really sorry that I yelled. And there's no excuse for, you know, me losing my temper. I have to work on controlling my temper, but sometimes people yell when they feel unheard. And I feel like you're not hearing me in what I'm asking you to do in this expectation.
Well,
I don't know if that's good or bad, but it works. It has worked. We've been out the door. We haven't been late in a very long time.
Well, that's good. So something's working. So,
and I haven't had to use demon mom voice in a very long time too. So to me, that is a solution that worked in a repair.
It's just accept, you know, trying going forward to not yell, to try to, instead of yell, go low, go with the lower voice, try to the whisper.
I think that in de-escalating a child, I do feel like I've had to use that, and it does definitely work when you're not giving the emotion back that they're giving. So anything else on repair,
I think it's called restore.
But it's repair.
Repair, restore, maybe it was all those billboards on the highway for getting hair plugs.
No, not at all. I didn't even know. But I guess yelly parents, you know, parents that yell, and I think that a lot of it has to do with people yell when they don't feel heard. And if you're not feeling heard, maybe you need to reframe the expectation and have a conversation with your kids about the expectation and what happens when it's not met.
Yeah, and a lot of it, especially with strong-willed children like our daughter, is that just like you and me, we both don't like to be told what to do. It's giving them options on how to, whatever you're trying to do. So like maybe in the morning she's having a hard time because she doesn't know what to wear. So instead of laying out the one outfit that, I laid out your outfit, it's like, well, I don't want to wear that outfit. It's like, well, giving them choices, you know, making it seem like they have a choice, or giving them, you know, two or three options so they still feel like they have some autonomy.
Where it's not becoming a fight, a back and forth.
And we do a good job for dinner because we do get pushed back from one kid doesn't like this one and they like this. So we can use the one meal and still make it a little differentiated where, you know, it isn't necessarily soup. It could be set on the side, like the meat and the noodles.
But nothing, there's not a whole new meal.
We're not making a whole new meal, but we can make the meal.
Just if you don't like celery, I just give you the soup without the celery. It's fine. You know, it's like.
So trying to make it seem like we do hear them, and it's okay that they don't like those things, but it's not, we're not going to make a whole new meal for them.
Again, we can go back into, we can link up the 1 minute reprimand or 1 minute praise episodes that we talked about, but I think that if you lose it, it's still time to give a 1 minute reprimand, even within that repair conversation.
Yeah, that would be good.
Because you are speaking to your own feelings and you're differentiating their behavior from.
And then you're connecting.
She also speaks to the fact that it doesn't matter what age you are. If your kids are 18, you can start this now. If you've always been a screamy parent that always yelled and lost it and insulted your kids or put them, you know, did whatever, that you could. Even if you have adult kids, she speaks about a, like, imagine if your parent right now, think about a bad thing that your parent said to you as a kid. Imagine if they called you right now and said, I'm looking back and I want to just say that I should have treated you this way in those moments. You as the adult would appreciate that. So yeah. It's never too late to repair that inevitable thing that's going to happen, because we're not just... Yes, we are adults. Yes, we are the leaders of the family. Yes, we are the pilots, but we're also human beings, and human beings are not perfect. And that, so we are imperfect people trying to help kids grow and develop with, like you said, without a manual, right? So when we don't do the perfect parenting reaction to things, we can model perfectly how to repair that specific moment. And we can show them going into adulthood what it looks like to repair a relationship when you do something wrong in it, which you'll do because that's human beings.
You know, I just thought of something good too from another R, Mr. Rogers. What Mr. Rogers would always say too, one of the best things that we can remember too as parents is remember what it was like to be a kid.
Yeah.
To put yourself in their shoes. Like, I remember vividly my childhood on a lot of situations like this to me, and what it made me feel like and what I would have wanted and those mm-hmm. things. And that's just part of empathy and trying to step into their shoes. Not that, you know, we have to be gentle parents, because we're not saying that at all. What no, we're saying but- is... But at the end of the day, we want
to have a relationship.
We want to have a successful relationship, because mm-hmm. we want our children to come to us and to talk to us about their problems and their issues and let them help navigate it themselves somewhat. Mm-hmm. Because we're not going to be there always. We're trying to raise adults. We're not raising kids. We're raising people who are eventually going to have to be adults.
Functioning into the adult. Real world.
And if we don't do it right now, these problems are going to... They're going to haunt them forever. They're going to be narcissists, or they're going to have anger issues, or they're going to have no trust, or they're going to have...
Or they're going to have a self, like an identity that, you know, I'm... You know, Father Mike Schmitz, this latest homily, I did not finish it, but I remember him telling this story many times over the years of just listening to his homilies for how long. And it talked about the untruths that you have to unbelieve. That are about yourself that stem from certain events in your childhood. Like, so he told this one story about his mom that when she was like a little kid, her uncle went or some relative went to pick her up and they said, "Oh, you just got so heavy." And so her whole life, she thought she was heavy just from that one incident, this untruth she had to unlearn, you know, about herself. You know, that there's so many lies that the evil one likes to use against us and likes to use different events in our lives that he can, you know, the more we can repair those myths, mistruths from happening in our, if we say something or do something we didn't mean to do as parents, that to repair that situation for our kids stops it from becoming an untruth that I think can have lasting negative effects.
Yeah, and I think the way we can tie it to our faith is what we do a good job of is modeling to our children going to monthly confession mm-hmm. and, you know, letting them know, like, we go to confession and these are things that we have to confess. Yeah. That
I have done that enough, like, I went to confession and like a few hours later, the kids, I don't know, I lost my temper. And I went, "Man, I just went to confession. And now I've lost my temper and I gotta go back." Like, they were like,
"Sorry, Mom.
You're making me go." Yeah, so it was just funny how, like, I did. I'm acknowledging, but I've sinned just now by talking to you this way. I shouldn't be losing my temper
but
to you.
That's the point, too. What you just said there is that no one makes us mad. How we react to it, mm-hmm. people don't get to control you. If you give other people that control, is that they can do the thing. How we react to it is our superpower, have to handle that. And there's nothing more freeing when someone's yelling at you or someone's being rude to you or these different things, and then you
don't give it back
and you're silent. I mean, depending on who it is, it really sometimes it makes them go insane. Like, they don't
understand.
Been there.
That's a whole other story for a whole other podcast. Yes. But okay, I think we've established repair. She said that actually, it, again, in the majority of other talks I've listened to, if there was one piece of advice or one main thing that she would ever stress, if a parent needed just one thing to remember, it was repair. That was the number one thing.
And yeah, that was her TED Talk, and it's millions of views. Yeah. And we'll link that in the podcast.
Okay, I believe this next is just a general statement. I don't think it's on the next part, which is resilience, but it is something that we could unpack and talk about, unless it does tie into resilience. I can't remember.
Is that trying to understand your kid's bad behavior?
No, this is what we talked about.
Is the foundation for effectively changing their behavior.
So understanding it first.
You can only change what you understand.
And that's actually building on the repair part. You're not going to get to a point of trying to understand the behavior if you're not trying to repair. Like I said, when you go into that conversation of what happened, I'm sorry, I lost my temper, this was my bad. However, let's talk about what happened, blah, blah, blah. In those conversations, you develop that relationship from that repair, and then you're able to then try to get down to the root cause of the behavior that you'd like to change.
Yeah, because ultimately we want to change it. If we're
and
just
you can't change what you
can't
don't
change
understand.
What you don't understand. So, right. So a lot of times too, it's just asking more questions. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, you know, and they may not know, and right away they may not want to get into it. But maybe later in that day, you can go for a walk or talk to them or like, hey, you know, that's not normally like you. Like, what's going on? Is there something going on at school? You seem not yourself. You know, we can ask those probing questions to try to get to deeper of what's going on, because you're not always going to understand, like, why all of a sudden did they just start talking back out of nowhere? You know, they may have spent a weekend at their friends, or they were with grandma and grandma's let them do whatever they want, or, you know, all these things, they come back and they got to like relearn their behaviors if they were time with their friends.
I think it's just also to explain. I'm a big believer in kids needing to know the whys behind the what's. Like, you need to know why I have this expected behavior of you. You need to know why I have this expectation. And this is what happens when you don't mean it again. That's where that 1 minute reprimand works out great. Because what you're telling them is, when you do this specific behavior, this is what happens to me and how it makes me feel. I know you're better than that. I would insert in there, how can I help you?
Yeah, giving them the tools.
How can
how
I
to
help
do it?
You make, like, what, how can I help you get your room clean or keep your room clean, or what ways?
Or hey, I
can
notice every time that this happens, you really want to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, what can we do to try to help mitigate so this doesn't happen? Because I know that you don't want to do this.
Because I think that when we yell, or when we, you know, get to that point where we're frustrated, I think that there is no listening on their end. They've shut down. Avery literally has this stare into space look. And I'm like, then I get even more mad. Like, look at me while I'm talking to you. You know, and she's like, I am. But she's looking past me because she's literally glazed over. Like, she's not listening. You know what I mean? So,
well, communication, only 7% is what you actually say. So right. How we say it and how we communicate it, from our body language to our inflection.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
All right. The next big piece. So repair is a big one. That's the biggest. And I think this next part is, everything I believe as an educator.
And a parent.
And a parent for sure. But really especially if we are, it's really how you look at yourself as a parent. If you are there to shelter your child from every obstacle in life, or if you're there to prepare them for life. Like, it really depends on your
resilience is the big buzzword right now.
Yeah.
But a lot of times we hear that word like, oh, just muscle through. Like, a lot of parents don't have the tools, or the kids are not even understand because we think what we're doing is helping the children.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to play two clips in a row. Is that okay? These two, one's 26 seconds, one's 36 seconds.
We'll see how the first one goes.
Okay.
To me, anxiety actually isn't a feeling. It's the experience of wanting to run away from a feeling. And if
you... avoiding it. Yeah.
It is. And you can't really run away from a feeling inside your body. That's what anxiety is. You're like, wait, this is not going to win. And so to me, the idea of, we want to help kids become resilient. resilience over happiness. Mm-hmm. And resilience comes from being able to tolerate and sit with the widest range of emotions, not constrict ourselves to.
All right, let's just go from the list. That's a lot to unpack. I really like that line before we get into resilience, is that anxiety is the running away from our feelings. And so much of our feelings, we either, at least I know, that's how I grew up. Like, I never talked about my feelings or how I was feeling, never. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's necessary we have to do that all the time.
Because we also don't want to be navel gazing.
We don't.
We don't want to have it be
so much about our feelings.
So much about our feelings. But I like the line, it's not about happiness.
Yeah.
It's about, because again, the world, if let's look at this through the lens of our faith, the world is going to offer us comfort and make us think that comfort and happiness are what life's all about. And that is the opposite, or that is not Christianity. Christianity.
Pope Benedict said that you weren't made for comfort.
You were made for greatness. And within that, we have a wide range of emotions. And the thing is that happiness is fleeting. Happiness is just another emotion that is temporary. What we as Christians are called to do is to have that unshakable joy within us. And that does come from a self-control and a not a reliance on yourself. It comes from a trust in God. It comes from that relationship that you have with Jesus, that it isn't something you can just do on your own. And so again, this is a lot of secular things, but really it's such a root of our faith. Go out and repair the relationships.
It's like perseverance. They always say in the Bible.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm like saying all of these are biblical truths. What she's speaking is biblical truth and she doesn't even realize it, right? Go and repair the relationship that you have with your brother before you can do anything else, right?
Forgiveness.
That happiness is not what life's about, right? That love is a sacrifice, that your life isn't about you, and it's not about
self-seeking happiness.
So when we're talking about building resilience, it's allowing kids to navigate their feelings and feel them and learn how to
stay in it,
through them, but not avoid them.
But not only working through it, but first comes the sitting with it, like sitting with those feelings. I don't know if it's the next clip or not, but she starts talking about that so much we want to get them out of that feeling immediately. Mm-hmm. But those feelings they're not going to go away. Mom and dad may go away and you move out of their house, but you're always going to find different times where you're going to be disappointed. You're going to lose a loved one. Someone's going to die. You're going to get a bad health scare, job
security.
And that
security. Avoidance of those feelings that are uncomfortable, but where there's growth and discomfort.
In our faith, in all things
that we encounter, there's growth and discomfort, and nobody likes to be uncomfortable, but that's where God is going to put us in some uncomfortable situations where we have to learn and grow from it. And he's going to do the same with our kids too.
But I think she talks about it a little bit here, but I think there's no difference between discomfort and learning, because what is learning? Mm-hmm. Learning is not, I don't know. And it's frustrating because you don't know how to do multiplication yet or division yet. There's that, I know addition and subtraction, and here's the lesson I need to learn. And it's in that discomfort that we have to be to try to do it, and I fail, and I got to try to do it.
But you have to also, again, and this is where you referenced the whole idea of powering through, and what did you like the old way of thinking, that old school way of thinking that just like, don't talk about your feelings, just power through. I think that, again, she's offering
A third way,
which again, it was what Christianity does, but offering that third way of understanding is not just power. I need to have a guidance and a sweet spot. And if we're talking education, you're talking about that, you know, that zone of development, that's like your education sweet spot, where you are not at a level of frustration where you can't grow, like, right? But you're also,
a little frustrated.
It also shouldn't be so easy that you become complacent and lazy. And you know, that in itself is sinful. You're not using your gifts and talents the way that God has created. I think you need to have a certain level of discomfort, but in a way that is where you can achieve small goals within that.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
It makes sense. And she goes on to also talk about the fact that what ends up happening is that if when it gets hard and every time we come in and help save them,
yeah.
what ends up happening is that's how you build up entitlement.
Yeah.
She says, is that one of those clips?
Yeah. yeah. That's why I was thinking we should just play them and then unpack them.
Yeah, so
I think we get ahead of ourselves.
That's all right.
Cause I referenced the one clip already.
All right, go ahead, play the next one.
I say play the next one cause I think she says those things.
Self-talk. A parent's words become a child's self-talk.
A parent's words become a child's self-talk. Wow.
Yes.
So what your parents say to you over and over again is what you say to yourself.
Especially when paired with an emotional situation. So when I'm frustrated, did I have someone come? And I always say, like, frustration is now, like, super bright. Do I expect someone to come and turn off the light? No frustration. Or do I expect someone to come and, like, by the way they're present with me, they dim the light.
That's what
so
I'm
it's
saying.
Just not so blinding.
So don't come in and do it for the guide.
Interesting.
Yeah, like, so those are two big things there. I think that what my parents say is my self-talk. When we go in and do things for them.
When things get hard, my parents are going to come save me.
When subliminally, what the self-talk becomes, I can't do this on my own.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to like that repair. What my parents say to me is my self-talk. That's probably my most vulnerable, like, because sometimes I say things I don't mean. And when I hear things like that, ooh, I don't want that to be my child's self-talk. So that's, again, referencing back to that repair, why that really is so important to do. Because you can undo that self-talk. It doesn't become their self-talk. But
it's never too late to repair it. You can replace those things with new sayings.
This is actually
like mantras or certain things.
I said something I didn't mean. This is what I really feel about you. And this
and
is
and keep repeating
that. And that does become their inner self-talk.
Well, that's why it's good to create like a family motto or a mantra. Mm-hmm. Ours is hard work pays off.
Right.
Like to where they have these things like, no, it's going to pay off. It's horrible right now. But
like with Avery, you know, she's always been this tenacious person. She doesn't give up. Like that is part of her personality. But what we've done is we've recognized that in her. And she does say that like in everything that she recognizes it in other people, like it's because us as parents have said, oh, you're the kind of person, you just don't give up, right? Like, because
it's like
we've
her badge
said
of
it,
honor.
It's her badge of honor. And sometimes her not giving up can be used in a negative way, like
not
she doesn't
her way.
Give
she doesn't
her,
stop
get away,
but she doesn't
give
away.
And I've actually used that as a, listen, you, one of the best qualities you have is that you don't give up. But you need to learn how to pick your battles because actually today when you didn't give up, that's what really got you in big trouble. Because you didn't.
Because it was coming from your parents. Or.
Yeah. Well, and at the same time, it's more like harnessing that good quality. You don't want to use it for bad. It's like your superpower. Yeah. But we've told her that so many times that it has been instilled in her that she's a person that doesn't give up.
And she's been that way for a long. Like she came that way.
She came that way, but we fostered that
by continually
pointing it out to her.
Yes.
And that has become her internal self. I'm a person that doesn't give up.
And I
that's
think
me.
That's the thing about the 1 minute father is that it doesn't work if you just do a 1 minute reprimand. There has to be a 1 minute praise. Mm-hmm. You have to do equal amount of time when you catch them doing things right or behaviors that you like to make sure you stop them and point them out. And like, hey, when you were trying to climb that tree, you didn't give up. You were out there for an hour till you finally got it. That's awesome. That makes me really proud that you didn't give up and that you may have fell 10 times, but you kept fighting, got it. That makes me so proud of you. I love you. So we have to also even do more of that than the negative. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to reinforce the things that we want more of and reprimand the things that we don't. But if you only do one way, it doesn't work. You have to do it.
So in building a resilience, what I like that she talked about was kind of what I was alluding to before, this whole idea of we want to get in that zone where you're saying discomfort is learning, right? But discomfort can't be so high level of frustration that I'm paralyzed almost by how frustrating
this
is.
You can't go straight to trigonometry when they don't know.
Right. So we do need to guide them, but we cannot do it for them. And we cannot eliminate their pain for them. So actually, I'm going to go into that next clip because I think it's really where she talks about that.
This is a longer clip.
And this is a longer one.
Another resilience building moment I can imagine is kind of like what I said to you earlier. Let's say your kid's a little older. I'm the only kid who doesn't know how to read chapter books, or I'm the only one of my friends who didn't get into honors math.
Mm-hmm. So right? Teenagers.
Yeah, let's say that. I'm the only kid who didn't get into honors math. Or I tried out for the lacrosse team. All my kids, my friends made it.
And I didn't make it, yeah.
Right. Everyone, me included, okay, my first instinct is to, quote, make my kid feel better. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going to make it next year. Or you made varsity soccer and none of them made soccer, right? Whatever the thing is. Or we say, you're going to see it's not a big deal. Okay, so here's the image. I'm big on images.
No, this is going to matter in 20 years or whatever year.
We say, right? The truth is we kind of say it because we're uncomfortable. Right. And we're just kind of making a kid a pawn in our game.
Sure.
But like if you picture your kid on a bench, and if you picture like them kind of in a garden, that's what I like to say. That's like the parable for lunch, life, the garden. And there's a bench. And essentially when your kid says, I'm the only one who didn't make the lacrosse team. Let's say they're sitting on the bench of, what is it? Disappointment, or maybe it's embarrassment, mm-hmm. or both, or feeling surprised and let down. I don't know. It's something like that. That's the bench. And as parents, we tend to have two instincts when our kid is on the bench, a kind of some type of distress. We either want to tell them that their bench isn't their bench. We're like, that's not a big deal. Mm. Even though they're like, but I'm...
But that's how I feel.
But I'm on it.
Yeah.
Like I'm, or we kind of see a sunnier bench and we're like, just come with me, right? But like, you're the best at, you know, at soccer. And so we're like, right? And both of those reduce resilience. Because resilience is kind of like your ability in that garden of life to like whatever bench you find yourself on, you're able to sit in it. Not drown in it, but sit in it. Like, because when you're there, you inevitably will be. Like, you're not terrified of it. You're not spending all your energy like running away from a bench. Like, if you saw that, you'd be like, dude, like what? Just a bench, you know? Just. And so how do we help our kid feel like essentially like it's okay to be them no matter what bench they're on? Or it's really, it's okay to be you even when you don't make the lacrosse team. Because that's really the essence. That's the core thing that resilience is about.
So that's so, it is an instinct. And that's in anything. If you have a friend or a loved one that just got disappointing news, your first instinct is to either
minimize it.
That's not that big of a problem as you think.
Or
to find some other positive thing that all outweighs it. And, you know, really, we look at Job, right, for suffering, that the only time his friends did something right is when they just sat with him in it.
On this bench that they're talking about, they sit there with him and just be present.
Everything she's saying is biblical truth that she didn't even realize. Right? Or maybe she is a Christian. I don't know. I don't know her background at all. Like, but sitting with your child. And you know what else I want to add to that is I want to add one more thing that I will do instinctually and you have done too, and I'm sure every parent has done, is, you know what? The same thing happened to me when I was your age. And then I go into my story. They don't want to hear that.
No.
Like, so they might want to, like, you can maybe bring that up later if it's a form of empathy and saying, you know, I have gone through what you have gone through, but it's not a time to process your childhood trauma with your child, you know? And I think that this is very difficult and it takes intentionality that in the moment when you're seeing your child hurting, to turn off your instinct to make it better immediately.
To solve it.
And to solve the problem is very hard. But I completely understand because what she's actually teaching, what this really is teaching your child how to process an event.
And mostly it takes time usually.
So how to process what just happened, how to process the disappointment. And when you kind of minimize, you're basically telling them what they're feeling is incorrect.
Yeah.
If you find another thing that they're better at or a positive thing to outweigh it, you're actually helping them or teaching them to avoid
their feelings,
the feeling and the obstacle that's right there in their way. You're also again, if you do the third way, you're kind of taking over and making it about you and your problems and your past.
That's ultimately, ultimately what it is.
How do you sit with your kid, though?
When they're hurting.
When they're hurting. How do you process the event with them?
Well, I think a lot of it, too.
Naming the actual feelings are okay.
I think that's part of it because we only have two feelings usually that we say. How are you feeling? Good, bad. Those aren't really feelings. Those are performances. Like good and bad. Like I'm angry. I'm sad. Like we're not, it's not good or bad. Like how was today at school? It was good. Mm-hmm. But that's not really a feeling. Like how did you feel about like the day? Like, are you angry? You're sad. You're disappointed. Those are emotions. And I do like, we saw the trailer for the new one for Inside Out.
Yes.
It has all the different feelings.
And they're all suppressed. And the mom is suppressed. Like it is, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
It's
this is like for good. A teenager. So yes. It looks really good. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's, to verbalize that, but letting them know that it's okay that these are normal things to be. It's okay when someone dies to be sad and to cry. There's a time to mourn, it says in the Bible.
Let's process this. Let me sit with you. And I can say, I can only imagine what you're feeling right now. Tell me more about what you're feeling.
But it's not going straight and to then, say, hey, they're in heaven. Don't worry about it or something like that.
Like, can I just sit with you? Maybe give them a hug, let them cry it out. I know there's been several times when I've said, this is a, like I said, I was guilty of the other things too.
Yeah, but
I know
there's been some. What parent doesn't want, that's our first instinct is to try to make it better. But
there were some instances, not all, some instances where I think I did it right. And I really just said, you know what? You are allowed to be angry about this, or you are completely allowed to feel, whatever the actual emotion that I'm seeing. I just want to make sure that you process it healthy. And I want you to be able to express it in a healthy way. I don't want you to, have a temper tantrum. If you don't get something that's your way, like screaming and carrying on and losing it, you're still trying to help them navigate their feelings, but at the same time, expressing those feelings in a healthy way.
But not trying to take it away from them.
But not trying to take it away at all. Feel your feelings.
Because that's what I think was the biggest.
Let them out.
It's one of the biggest problems of the society is that parenting now, the goal is happiness. And unfortunately.
Well, the goal of our society is happiness.
Well, especially now for parents and their children. So that is
do whatever makes you happy.
But not only that.
Right now, that's temporary.
In the term of happiness for parents is that I want.
A temporary fix.
No, I want them to be happy 24/7. That if I have to set up 5 play dates this week, if I have to sign you up for all these things, we don't even let our kids have a chance to be bored. And because that's a feeling. Boredom is a feeling. Yeah. We don't even let our kids be bored. Right. And guess what? Life, there's going to be times when they're bored. They can't scroll 24/7. They can't do these things. And what happens in boredom? When you're bored and you can sit still, you're processing, you're thinking, you're doing different things, like not listening to music, not listening to podcast, not listening to things, but to think and to process.
Yeah.
Because we don't even let them, just go to a grocery store. You can't even see someone sitting in line without having their phone out and scrolling.
Yeah.
Like there is no time for boredom anymore.
And boredom
is the birthplace of creativity and to process our feelings and to do some thinking and
prayer. Part of it,
but we're not doing our kids any service by stealing this way of how to regulate their emotions and their feelings, how to, how to process them, and then how to sometimes disappointment is good for their lives. Yeah. Like, hey, you know what? Maybe you weren't good enough. I don't have to tell them that, but like Michael Jordan didn't make the freshman basketball. But that was probably the best thing that ever happened to him.
Because it made him work harder.
Made him work harder at it and try to do those things. But we can't say those things to them.
Not right away. I think that's why I think processing with them, allowing them space and just being there physically, just there for them.
I think that's what she was saying is that she compared it like sitting on a bench is that.
I'm not going to take your bench away. I'm not going to try to take it away.
But that loneliness really makes it a lot harder when they feel like they're in it. They're the only one,
yeah,
or no one understands. And like I said, it doesn't matter saying things, mm-hmm, but we can't let them take that and, you know, just, you know, but a lot of times too, kids don't know, like they also over exaggerate what they say. She made the example, like, I'm never going to go to school again. Like, they don't really mean that, but that's what it feels like to them, that they're so embarrassed, mm-hmm, that they didn't make the team, mm-hmm, that they, you know, and what happened, you know, what usually happens, like, I forget what it was about, but Avery was so like embarrassed. And then she went to school the next day
and no one even said
anything about it. Yeah. It's like a lot of times kids, you know, all
and
of
they'll
us
see,
that.
And you read that book, The Obstacle is the Way, right?
Yeah,
because sometimes facing those fears is, again, what makes you grow and makes you, and talk about, if you want your kids to have happiness, if you want your child to experience true joy, there's nothing more exhilarating than overcoming an obstacle that you went through. Avoidance is a fake happiness. If I'm avoiding
feelings.
It's
not even fake. It does the opposite. It makes you, what she said is that it leads to entitlement. Because if every time it gets hard, yeah, and I come in and do it for them, you're breeding a sense of entitlement. And then when that time does come and they can't get what they want and you're not there, then that really makes them like a temper tantrum, and it get to a teenager. It looks like, oh man, what an entitled jerk.
And just knowing that, just the simple line.
But sometimes you have to be there
with them.
You
can do hard things.
Yeah.
I believe in you. Look at how many hard things you've gone through. You can do hard things. You can overcome that.
Yeah, but you can also be there in them, you know.
But I'm right there with you. I'm right there next to you on that bench.
Sometimes we have to do it with you. Sometimes I have to show you. I'm not going to do it every time for you. And there's sometimes that we do have to step in and help them when they really can't get it.
But
they've exhausted it.
Doing it,
but we don't have to
them or eliminating
the obstacle. No, we can give them clues like, hey, well, maybe it's not that. Have you thought about this? And asking, mm-hmm, questions, try to get them to think about it in a different way. But if every time it gets hard, we come in, we're stealing that from them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's literally how their brain figures it out and how their brain grows. Mm-hmm. Like literally, that's how they make new connections. And that's why it's so hard, because that frustration, because it hurts your brain, literally, because you're trying to make new synapses connect, because you're figuring something out. That's how we learn. And it's very difficult and it's discomforting.
And you know,
Dr. Ray called them the bulldozer parents. We don't want to be them. We don't want
to.
We don't want
to. Trying to, you know, I'm not saying that God, you know, God never creates evil, you know, or God doesn't. But I think that when I look back at my own life and all the obstacles that I had and all of the, you know, negative things that I went through, I really think it does shape you. It does make you who you are. It does, when you do overcome them or you look back, you could see God's hand in it. While you didn't fully understand it then, you do understand it a little bit when you're on the other side. You know, that if all things happen through God's will, right? Then if something's happening that's difficult to your child, you got to trust that God knows what he's doing, but he also put you there to be right there with your child to help them through it. Not to do it for them or to eliminate the obstacle.
Was it John 16:33? Is that,
we need to have that faith.
That I tell you this so that you'll have peace in me, Jesus says, is that take comfort. There's going to be trials and tribulations, but take comfort. Don't lose your courage, because I've overcome the world.
Because I'll tell you, exactly, the world, you know, I've overcome it.
And don't, you know, there's going to be hard things. There's going to be tough. You're not going to make the team. These things are going to happen, but there's a lesson. There's things that God's trying to teach us in these tough times. Like right now, I'm going through this back stuff again. And there's something there that God's trying to teach me. There's a lesson I still need to learn. There's something that this, even in the worst of situations, God can bring something good out of it.
I wonder what kind of vulnerability or what our kids are learning from how we take on hard things and how we respond to them. You know, we're also modeling how we overcome our own obstacles. You know, it was really cool to see how many of our kids at our school, we had someone important to us have a big loss in his life, and we asked the kids to make cards for him, and they were beautiful, empathetic, but so many of them experienced loss. So because they experienced loss, they were able to speak to how they trusted in God to this person. And that was so beautiful because it's like, these are kids. But
the
these
faith
kids,
of a child is, but is these something
kids,
pure.
Yes, but these kids have overcome difficult obstacles. One was a really bad illness. And he said, you know, through this, I learned this about God and myself. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is just kids having this profound wisdom because they overcame an obstacle that I'm sure as parents, we would have wanted to completely take away from them because we didn't want them to feel that.
Like try, you know, to hide it or try to not even tell them about it.
I mean, in some ways, you definitely want to have your kids not go through trauma.
Yeah,
right?
That's different.
But sometimes these big, impactful, horrible things make them more empathetic, stronger, more determined versus having everything handed to them. So, all right, last piece of this is about relationship. And this is actually the core of the whole thing, right? In both of these instances, you repair a relationship. You can only help your child build resilience if you have a relationship, right?
If not, so you seem like a drill sergeant.
Yeah, this is foundational to it all. And I'm going to just play both clips and we'll unpack it.
Sure.
Because I think we get ahead of ourselves because we've just watched so many different things of her. And I feel like, and I think that there's a lot of clips we didn't use. So we're like, and then she said this
one
time.
Well, this is like a 2-hour interview. These are just clips.
These are just clips.
I couldn't remember what it wasn't.
And we watched other
when
things
I listened to an interview with her and Dr. Huberman. So yeah, I've listened to a bunch of
Well, she's very good because it's real.
Well, there's some stuff I don't agree with, but we picked and choose the stuff I think that would help everybody.
Right.
Which to me is the first line every parent needs in their toolbox. I'm so glad you're talking to me about this.
To the child. Say that to the child right away. When they're stressed out, when they're angry, upset,
that's
shameful,
right.
any unsettling emotion that you don't enjoy yourself, say back to them, I'm so glad you're telling me this right now.
That's right. I'm so glad we're talking about this. Okay. Because, and again, if we think about it in an adult context, if I was like, I'm so mad at my husband, he never, he never is home for bedtime, and he forgot the one thing I said, and if I was like, hey, like, you're never doing anything around the house, and I'm really frustrated. If he said to me, you know what, Becky, well, you're upset, but, like, I'm so glad you're telling me about this. Like, you know relationships, I'd be like, I think we're good now. Like, I don't even know, what was I upset about?
Right,
like,
right.
Because what someone's really saying to you when they say that is this feeling in you that you're feeling is real, and I still want to be in a relationship with you when you're feeling that way.
Yeah, I still love and accept you.
That's right. Equally simple. It's just tell me more.
Mm.
Tell me more. Oh, and then, oh, so they posted the list on the pinboard. Wait, so everyone was there. Oh my goodness, everyone was there. And let's say I knew my son had a crush on someone. Oh, that person was there too. And you were like so excited. You were going to like be on the lacrosse team and that person saw it. Oh.
Saw that you failed. And
exactly. So I'm just like fleshing out the story. And now at all these moments that my kid was in pain, which by the way, part of the pain was probably that they were alone. I'm kind of infusing myself in every moment. I'm adding connection. I'm adding believing. And
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I didn't see that part. I didn't see
so
this last
clip.
So
just to recap, because we missed one. So the three things that every parent should know, that was this longer clip, was number one, I'm so glad that you're talking to me about this. Mm-hmm. So when they want to open up and talk to you, not to just shut it down or I'm busy or this or that, like, no, I appreciate that you trust in me to tell me how you feel and you're pouring yourself out. So that's good. The second one is I believe you. Not necessarily, we have to always believe what they're saying, but believe.
I believe that this made you feel this way.
This is the way that you're feeling because of that. That I feel like,
because again, like
the world's going
to
end, or I'm not going to go to school ever again. Mm-hmm. I believe that you feel like that.
Yeah, not I believe.
But you don't,
I believe your feelings.
But
I don't believe.
But you don't even have to say I believe. That's how you feel. She said that, like, you don't even have to do that. You just say I believe you. Not like you believe everything about the story, because they don't even it helps them to really go deeper in that relationship that you believe them. It's not. It's the same thing. Like they don't understand the differentiating between mm-hmm. like your feelings and what you're saying right now. Like mm-hmm. it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And the last one was just tell me more, like trying to flush out the story to get them to walk through it with you. Mm-hmm. But I like that part where she was saying that, like, to connect.
Like, especially if it's an embarrassing moment that she's speaking to or a moment that's making them feel really alone, that just them retelling you the story and almost like saying, well, I bet you felt this, or I bet you thought that, yeah. or tell
were
me
you,
about that.
Like you're
that
there with it. Them in, like in the past. Like you're going back with there with them.
So they don't feel like they're alone in it. I really like that. And I think that letting them speak to, again, this is about processing.
And relationship. The first one is,
and you want to have that
I'm so glad that you're talking to me about this. About is this. That, hey, I'm recognizing that this relationship is important to me, that I'm very happy that you're telling me about this, and I want to be part of your life, and I want to listen to you, and I want to be there for you, which is hard.
And it's really important to do this in all ages and stages, because the little people, little problems, big people, big problems. When a little person's coming to you and you want to dismiss, this isn't a big deal, that's, you know, but it is to them, and they might not later tell you the bigger stuff when they're bigger.
If you just shut it down.
If you shut it down and dismiss.
They just think that all my things, they don't want to hear anything I have to say.
They don't want to know about
even
me.
If it's about stupid Mario Kart for the 100th time. Should I listen to every time?
No, I feel like that's not like a processing. We're talking about processing emotions, not telling about the next, how many stars you got. However, we should be proud in their little achievements if they're that excited.
That's right. What I'm struggling with.
Our son really isn't a Mario Kart and has to tell us about his every achievement. And we're trying to like not like want him to be on video games all the time, but he's not barely hardly ever. But anyway.
Yeah. So some of the other things that I took away, I just want to quick share before we finish up is that one thing that really she says in the beginning that stuck with both of us was that parenting is the only job you care about on your deathbed.
Ooh.
You know, that no one on their deathbed ever says, man, I wish I would have worked more.
Would have been on my phone more, would have been binged watched Netflix more, I would have worked like on my laptop in the front room more, I would have cleaned more. Nobody says those things, but that is what I'm personally feeling a lot of more of my time with than spending time with your kids.
No, the other one was our job as parents is not to prevent our children from feeling discomfort, but to teach them how to navigate it.
I love that.
You know, because that's what we're trying to do is if we're the pilots, we're trying to help them navigate it. And then eventually they're going to have to be in charge of the steering wheel. So they're going to have to know, like, but I think that's also teaching them tools and processes and systems on how to do it. Like, hey, I see that, you know, when you're doing, you know, when your sister tells you this, you get really frustrated real fast. Is there something that we can do to not let it get to that point?
And you know what? I think in other talks that we watched with her, she does speak to the fact that I'm not going to expect you to come to me as a parent and say, it's kind of like the same as saying, man, I'm just such a bad surgeon. I'm a terrible surgeon. And the first question is, well, did you go to school to be a doctor? No. Well, then how can you expect to be good at surgery? So it's the same thing. And there's so many different facets to maybe different things that our kids are going through, we shouldn't expect ourselves to know all the answers, and we shouldn't get down on ourselves when we don't. So let's say we're having that conversation sometimes, or I've done this actually with our daughter. We've looked up together how to overcome this, whatever this specific feeling or how to navigate it. We've actually looked up. We've watched together some like talks like on Google, like for her age, you know, about how to deal with certain situations, because now that we have the world at our fingertips, like we really don't have an excuse. We could look things differently, but the problem is, and this is what we talked about with Dr. Ray, it's so saturated to where you feel as a parent that you're paralyzed of if what you're doing is the right thing, because the experts have kind of overtaken this.
Yeah, and there's a lot of this gentle parenting. And I think one good thing that I took away too about, especially in the middle when things are hard, you know, especially the example she used when the kid was doing like a puzzle and he was getting, I don't want to do this and that, and just get freaking out, is to say to them, this is hard. Like to acknowledge it, that it's hard first. Mm-hmm. Like this is hard, but I'm not going to do it for you. I know that you are capable of doing it yourself, and I'm not going to take that from you, because that's where the growth and the happy feeling that you get from completing hard thing comes.
Yes.
And that this is what your body learns. Yeah. So it's like giving them that space of discomfort.
You validated that it's hard.
Yes.
You validated to them that it's hard. But again, you don't, like, for example, if it's, you know, Avery, you don't give up. You can do hard things. And I believe
and it's going to be hard. And just, there's going to be some pain.
And maybe I'll show you sometimes a corner piece. Maybe I'll just slide one piece over. I'm not going to do the puzzle with you, but here, let me help you with this one piece of it. Maybe that'll help
tie
it together.
Sometimes you have to look like the fool. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you're going to do it wrong and you're going to look silly. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. You know, that's how we learn. And the other thing was, well, we talked about the three things. Boundaries, which we didn't really touch on. Henry Cloud has a great book on boundaries from a Christian perspective. If you've never read Boundaries, read Boundaries. Boundaries, validation feelings is an incomplete part of the strategy. You need to listen, but keep your role as a leader. Mm-hmm. See the feelings are real, but you're not affected by them. Empathy requires boundaries. Boundaries are what we will do. So being a sturdy leader, boundaries aren't always the consequence.
I understand that you're mad that you don't have a phone. I understand that you're upset and that you think it's unfair that you're not going to get one of these until you're in high school. And I completely understand why you would feel that way.
Yeah. But
and
if you keep doing
I'm not
going to
cave.
But this is what
this
I'm going to do.
This isn't going to change it, but I can empathize with your feelings and why you think it's unfair. But let me explain to you why these boundaries are put into place. And we've had these exact conversations, and you know what? They turn out really well. Like, there's been very good conversations as to why. Again, I'm a big believer in the whys behind. If you're going to set a boundary, you really should have the why. Not because the kids are entitled to the why, but because if you want buy-in from your child to really understand that you're what the reason is for the boundary.
Well, Nietzsche says, if you know the why, you can handle any how. So it helps them process.
Know your why. Yeah. Why
know your why.
Why did my parents not want me to have a phone? Avery knows all the reasons why.
And like I said, going back to the Mr. Rogers thing, I know my parents would always tell me, why do I have to do this? Because I said so. That doesn't make it any better. Yeah, I know you're in charge and you told me to do it. But I don't. It doesn't mean your child also gets to talk back every time I tell them to do something. But this can be in a conversation on the front end,
leader. You can be a leader and you can establish, you know, a strong presence without having to, what's the word I want? Like, you know, the whole thing of like, well, I don't have to apologize. I'm the parent, or I don't have to tell you the why.
With
I'm
humility
the parent.
Always, especially in parenting.
It is. It's because again, you're modeling to them how to be humble.
But I think that's the difference though, is that the why needs to come on the front end. Because if it's on the back end, if we're just like
then
telling them to do things,
like,
you're in defensive mode.
Yeah.
Like if you're just like, you do this and do this and they don't understand why. I'm like, okay, look, hey, look guys, we all just got to, the house is a mess. We're all going to clean because we have this thing going on and this is why we have to do it right now because of this. We're not going to be around tomorrow. And they're like, well, I want to do this. I'm like, that's a
but
toy.
But you live here for free.
That's
so
a
you got to do it.
But that's on the life. That's on the front
that's
end.
That's my why.
Trying to explain things on the front end more. Not
you
that
live
they're,
here too and you have to accept responsibility for living here too.
And you know, I forgot where it's at. I think it's actually Romans, where it says that suffering produces perseverance, and perseverance is how you get proven character. You know, character. You know, the things that we think about become our actions, and our actions become our habits. Our habits end up becoming our character. And if our habits are every time it gets hard to quit, then we become a quitter. If every time it gets hard, I may struggle, but I persevere and I get through them, then I'm the kind of person who doesn't give up and does hard things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that in-between time that's very hard. But it's, I
this
was right.
This is so perfect.
I was right,
yeah.
Right? Romans?
Not only, Romans 5, not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, character, hope. And hope does not put us to shame. Because God's love has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us.
Romans chapter 5. Mm-hmm. I knew that.
You know, Yeah, we really rob them when we teach them avoidance. And to teach someone to avoid their feelings and not just feelings. This isn't just about feelings. This is about situations. This is about obstacles. Process.
It's about relationships. It's about these things.
Well, I'm talking about persevering through not just feelings, but persevering through obstacles. And
because there are going to be tons of obstacles.
And so what I have found from teaching both middle school and teaching high school and now leading at an elementary school, I actually saw this more at the high school level. There's just so many kids right now that have no coping skills, that look to adults to do everything for them. Because there's been for so long adults not giving them the gift of being able to do something on their own. And now they're
looking to the adults for every, like, that's a crisis.
They can't fill out job applications.
Yeah, they're looking for permission the whole time.
And they're looking for permission. And it's just, we're so
We're
obsessed with,
because that's where happiness
perfection
comes from.
And I know this comes with our last
episode. Yeah.
You know, and this just goes this anytime and whatever, I'm just gonna say it. So anytime if I talk to a child now and as an administrator, I get a parent long email. Why did I talk to their child? And this fear that like there's a label or that they did something wrong. My goodness, does anyone remember what it's like to be a kid? You're making a mistake every 5 minutes. Your brain isn't fully formed yet. We should be constantly correcting and you know, talking
redirecting.
To them, redirecting and
giving them new life skills.
I mean,
and
like,
tools.
Well, that's just that,
and but correcting like, them,
even in how they treat each other. If they're terrible to each other, that we have the conversation about how to treat each other and
they're
how
not
to
canceled.
Navigate that. They're not canceled, and this culture has come to that point. So now that there's this fear that anytime you correct a child, that the parent has to defend it or has to investigate it too and prove that. But it's like they're kids. Kids mess up.
But that's what boundaries are for. We set these boundaries and these standards, and when they don't live up to them, someone's going
to have a consequence.
We have to hold them accountable.
And hold them accountable, and not just hold them accountable, have them learn from the action. There's so many
kids. Not to say, Mom, I need you to handle this for me because I didn't do it.
Right. My favorite students that I've had throughout my life as a teacher, there was a good handful of them that made a lot of mistakes, but man, did I love them. Like, so like, you know, like it's, we don't think like that. Like correcting the behavior is part of the process, correcting the behavior and helping them navigate the right way to treat each other, the right way to handle a situation, the right or wrong way to excel in school. Like these are all normal
Yeah, if they get caught
that
cheating, that's not acceptable. We have to teach them that that's wrong.
It's not acceptable, but it doesn't mean they're
canceled. Doesn't mean that they're
labeled
a cheater forever. That means that's separating the behavior and them.
The behavior and the person are completely different. So it's mind-blowing to me that this idea that I have to rescue them from being in trouble.
There's another R.
Oh, yeah. But it's a wrong kind of R.
Yeah, we don't want to.
It's not, you are not, you could rescue them. But
you're not
going to
be there. You're not
going to
be there. You're stealing it. You're stealing. You're not rescuing them.
And
you're stealing
the obstacle that has been put in your child's life,
and that's
may be exactly what God thinks they need, or what God knows they need to get through to become the person that He's calling them to be. And it's not your job to remove it.
And maybe they need
your job to help them navigate.
Maybe they need to be taught humility. They need to admit that they made a mistake and not try to say, no, Mom, it wasn't me. It was the teacher. No, it was for this excuse and this excuse.
There's so much of
that. There's so much of excuses.
And it's to their child's detriment.
Yeah.
And it's so heartbreaking.
And when more and more.
So heartbreaking to see, because the kids are good. And I'm not saying the parents are. They're trying their best. But because of this mindset that I have to be my child's advocate, problem solver, problem eliminator, this has robbed them of formative things that they'll never get back. And it's quite frankly disgusting to me. And it makes me upset because it's ruining their childhood and their formative years. So please do not eliminate the obstacles in your child's life.
The obstacle is the way. Read the book by Ryan Holiday. But the good news is that if this isn't something that you struggle with, that you struggle with your kids as they're struggling, is that's what we should be doing. Mm-hmm. The good news is, as Dana White has said, is that if you teach your kids how to not give up, how to be resilient, how to, you know, sometimes those obstacles, you have to go through them. Sometimes you got to go over them or around mm-hmm. them. Sometimes you need to get help to help you lift you up over the wall. But if you teach your kids those skills, they're going to be in the 1% of the world because mm-hmm. everyone is teaching their kids the opposite way. And if you teach your kids Amen. These things, then they are going to bulldoze everybody else in a good way. And then they're going to rise to the top because they're going to look different than everybody else. They're going to be emotionally stable. They're going to know how to do hard things. They're going to be the ones who are going to take honors classes where the parents can't do their homework for them, or they can't plagiarize, or they can't do these other things.
Yeah.
They're going to be the ones who are taking double majors, who are going to be studying hard because they're going to know the value of hard work.
Yeah. And I said this when I was a high school teacher. I said it to my own students, my freshmen. I said, you know, did you guys know, because this was a statistic, I think, in a Father Mike Schmidt's homily, did you know that this generation is the least ambitious generation of all time? I don't know how they got that metric. I don't even know if it's true.
Sounds
I don't right. know how you measure that, but I guess that this generation is the least ambitious of all time. And they kind of looked at me at first like, what? Like, kind of defeated. And I said, no, don't look at me like that. Do you know what great news this is? And they're like, what? I'm like, if you are an ambitious person, nothing's going to stop you. There's nobody's going to stand in your way. So be ambitious in the least ambitious generation, supposedly. I don't know about that, but be ambitious if it's lacking in that, right? A student in that difficult situation where they all made cards for someone that's special to us. This was so sweet. It's like, I know I'm just a kid, but if you ever need anything, I'm here to talk to. And he wrote, I don't know if you've seen the latest Rocky, but he quoted this quote and it's, let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life, but it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. And he quoted that. I'm like,
very famous scene.
In the newer Rocky. But it's so true. It's a life lesson. And I hope every single child, I hope our children learns that when you get knocked down, I'm not going to take away the knockdown from you. I want to help you get back up. When you make a mistake, you know,
apologize if you have to.
So there was a student a few years ago who made this really bad mistake. It was bad. It was a bad mistake. You know, that one that he could get canceled for. And, you know, I saw him just really internalize it. And it took me to a point where I pulled him aside and I said, you know, did you go to confession for this? And he said, yeah. I said, then what makes you more important than God? If he forgave you, you have to forgive yourself and move on from this. You cannot harbor this resentment in yourself of the bad actions that you did because you made a mistake. You'll make more. You have to learn from it and you have to allow God to forgive you and you be forgiven and it doesn't define you and you move on. Now, that isn't negating what he did. It's not minimizing what he did. It's not saying, well, what you did wasn't that bad or it wasn't you or, oh, it was you and all these other people. But it's acknowledging what you did was wrong, but hey, you're going to learn from it. How are you going to go through? How are you going to get back up? And that's what we need to teach our kids, not how to avoid, but how to go through.
This book is all about. So I'll put a link. I did a book review about it that kind of goes through the whole book and gives you some of the 3 points about it. And I'll just share a couple quick things because it's very important.
About the obstacle.
Obstacle is well, the
this
way.
Is, this should be its own podcast, though.
Yeah, I'm going to give you, let's give a preview.
Sorry, everybody. This is a longer
But obstacles become a chance or an opportunity for us to try and practice some kind of virtue to overcome what's difficult in our way.
Ooh.
Whether that may be patience or courage, humility or prudence. And a lot of it has to do with, he says, there are three things: perception, action, and our will. The perception is how we see the obstacle. If we see it as, oh, it's something in my way,
mm-hmm.
versus what matters is not how I see them, but how I react to them. It's like, no, I'm a kind of person who doesn't give up, that this is a way for me to get better. Is that how we see the obstacles? Is that the way? The way to get better is by things that I need to learn, that the skill and how to do it. This is the opportunity. And it helps us to be able to control our emotions, which we talked about. But the other parts were giving you practice for resilience. Like, you know, like that Roman says, is that you have to have this perseverance. Well, the only way to persevere is to things that you have to persevere through. You need opportunities to do it.
Right. And if we let our child avoid every opportunity or we take it away from them, what are we doing? We're robbing them of that experience,
yeah.
even though because it makes us uncomfortable to see them uncomfortable.
That's mostly what it is, makes us uncomfortable. So what can we do to get them out of that uncomfortableness is that giving them tools mm-hmm. to, hey, when it gets hard, what are some things that we can do, some strategies, whether that's taking some deep breaths, whether that's taking a step back, whether that's collecting yourselves, whether that's saying like a mantra, like I do hard stuff, mm-hmm. I never give up, whatever it may be, giving them tools to, because the hard things are coming, whether
or
that's
allowing
a state test or a, mm-hmm. you know, these hard things that they're going to have to do mm-hmm. or tryouts for a team. And
that's what I was going to say, allowing failure and sitting with the feelings of that failure and not trying to negate it. But I think we
hammered it home.
We hammered it home, man. Okay. So again, baseline relationship, make sure you restore, right? What is it? Is it restore?
Repair.
Repair. Did it again. Make sure you repair or restore the relationship when you mess up, because you will as a parent. But then, and it's also not your job to eliminate obstacles. It's your job to help instill resilience in your child.
Yeah.
And so you do not, just because something makes you uncomfortable doesn't mean that you need to eliminate their discomfort. Work through your own discomfort with it.
And these were the three things in this podcast that she left everybody with. The mm-hmm. three things. We are all good inside.
So
we're all made
our
in inherent dignity. We're all good inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's never too late to repair.
Amen. Yeah.
And the only real strategy you have is connection.
Yeah.
That isn't gentle. That's connecting. That's trying to make a loving relationship mm-hmm. worth repairing, worth being resilient for, worth being vulnerable to.
Yeah. Amen.
Amen. So hopefully that this encouraged you that, you know, we're not perfect. We're the Catholic couple, but we struggle with the same things that you do.
She's
a clinical psychologist.
Stuff.
She struggles. Everyone struggles. Yeah. We're all human, but we're good inside. We make sometimes bad. We have our emotions
bad
get
choices,
the best of us, bad choices.
Our faith doesn't cancel us.
It doesn't. We are forgiven. Get up, go to confession.
Yeah, get up, go to confession. Teach your kids to do the same. All right, end us in prayer.
In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, glory be to the Father and to the Son and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end.
Amen.
In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. All right, thanks a lot for watching. If you could, subscribe down here below is that button. Hit the subscribe, like, share. We really do appreciate it. God bless you.